Okay, I record these intros after the episode just because I kind of talk through what we covered and kind of give you a little bit of an introduction to the episode. I'm so fired up right now. Like, I literally want to just go run 5 miles or do 100 push-ups or do something. Sophie is so motivational. So today's episode is with my guest, Sophie Grace Holmes. Sophie's a personal trainer, a motivational speaker, an extreme athlete, but she's also a poster girl for the cystic fibrosis community, which is a disease that has a direct impact on lung function. We talk about that pretty early on in the episode. But Sophie's not exactly what you would think when you think of somebody who has lived their entire life with, say, cystic fibrosis. She's an extreme ultra-endurance athlete, slash fitness person, slash motivational speaker based around mindset and using issues in your life and not letting the opinions of others, particularly in the medical community in this context, but I think it's applicable to everybody, to not let other people's opinions dictate your reality and how you live your life. Today's episode, we go into a little bit of everything, a lot of fire in here in terms of motivation and how to control your mindset and use the negativity that may be aimed at you as fuel for your fire. We talk about things like goal setting procedures, which I'm always curious. Sophie was only the second ever person with cystic fibrosis to summit to get to the top of Kilimanjaro, the highest peak in Africa. She is also about to do a 80-mile paddleboard from the Bahamas to Florida, and is cycling across Britain, just under 1,000 miles in 9 days in this coming September. She's also ran a 100-kilometer race to the Stones in 2017, and has done countless things in between. She pushes her physical body to its limit and is constantly challenging herself to see how far she can go. Even though we do talk a lot on fitness, a little bit on nutrition in here, this is very, very heavy on the mindset side of things because it's what attracted me to Sophie first. I went into kind of her rabbit hole of Instagram several times when I was doing research for this episode, where I was looking for talking points, and you know, I do kind of my due diligence before I bring on anybody onto the podcast, whether that is somebody that I've known for the last 10 years or somebody that I've just met. I kind of do that due diligence, but I kept getting lost in the motivation on her Instagram because of the content she puts out there and the very applicable to the real world that some of the struggles that you may be going through and how you need to condition yourself and contextually reframe the way you're seeing these situations so that you can move forward and progress and hit your end goal. She's really such an inspiring figure. I'm so glad there's people like her out there, for either as a poster girl for cystic fibrosis community and the fitness world in general, but just to show that everything is down to the way that you see it, that you can't decide the life cards you've been dealt, but you can sure as hell figure out how to play the hand. And I think Sophie Grace Holmes is a living testament of that. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. If you loved it as much as me and were as fired up after, be sure to tag me and Sophie on your Instagram stories. And I hope you enjoy today's episode with my guest, Sophie Grace Holmes. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by my guest, Sophie Grace Holmes. Sophie is a personal trainer, motivational speaker, extreme athlete, and adventurer. On top of putting out amazing workouts and motivational images on her social media, she's also a pillar of the fitness world for the cystic fibrosis community. I'm so excited to talk all things motivation, setbacks, fitness, health, and extreme adventures in today's episode. Sophie, I've been dying for this since we connected last week and sorted it out. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. So exciting. It's actually so strange being on here because you don't even realize I've been like blitzing through your podcast the last few weeks. And now I'm actually talking to you. I'm like, oh my God, you're actually real. This is like amazing.
I love it. Sophie, I was just saying for everybody listening before we're done here, like I've been obsessed with your Instagram for like the last week because your content's so motivating. Your workouts are deadly. Just for everybody listening, can you tell them a little bit more about yourself, a little bit of a backstory to your life so far, where you grew up, etc.?
Of course. So I basically have quite a very different story and life and outlook to probably 95% of the people I know. And that is because I was born with a life-threatening genetic lung disease called cystic fibrosis. And the funny thing is, I think it's sometimes the things that you are told that you're never going to overcome, you actually are the things that you do. Because when I was born, my parents felt like it was like bringing up a child to die because I shouldn't have made my 16th birthday. And so for them, that's like a massively daunting thing. However, I'm now 27 and, you know, I have never been more fit and more alive in my entire life. And that is all down to the setbacks and the things that people told me I couldn't do. So throughout growing up, I've basically become this feisty fighter of a human being, being told that, oh, you can't ever go and run that marathon or go and do that thing. When actually I've gone, well, watch me. Like, if you don't think I can, then I'm going to make sure I can. And I'm lucky that I've always had this strong mindset and this positive attitude to life, to simply just want to live it to the, like, the most biggest life I can. And, you know, for a lot of people, that is absolutely terrifying. I got told the other day by somebody that they would cry themselves to sleep every day if they had to date me, because they're like, I don't think I could ever keep up with you because you just live so full. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly what it's all about. Like, living the life you want to lead. And cystic fibrosis has given me that opportunity, because I always think you should have the courage to find your own adventure in life and live it on the terms that you wish to. And I think the most terrifying thing is for people not to do that, or not even to tap into any of their potential. So I've kind of been given a head start through a big struggle that I'm going to have for the entire of my life.
Oh, I love your contextual reframe. And it was funny, I went down your kind of rabbit hole of Instagram when I was kind of just even in preparation for this, because I forgot I was doing research and you'd put up a video or something and I'm like, I'd be so fired up after listening to it, because it's for anyone that's not following Sophie, I highly recommend you do that at the end of this episode, because that attitude towards this is what the world sees as a negative, but I'm wearing it as a badge of honor and I'm turning it into a positive. That whole message is transcendent across all of your content. Your backstory is so interesting, because similar to when I had Ben Mudge on the podcast, and cystic fibrosis is something that's very, very close to my heart. I had a cousin pass away from it a few years ago, and to see the community that you're building and giving people that motivation, and for people outside of it, you know, that don't have any issue with cystic fibrosis, that just need motivating. What got you into fitness first? Because obviously the normal, quote unquote, normal thought process for people with cystic fibrosis is don't do that much exercise, you know, don't push your limits too hard, you know, all these kind of stories that people will tell you, or even may have been told medically. What got you into fitness first? What was kind of your introduction to it?
Do you know what? It was my dad, and he used to run a lot of marathons, and I still remember the day where he said, come on, Sophie, you need to go running. It was pouring down with the rain. He was like, you have to conquer your first mile. And I remember that, because I remember thinking, God, this is so far. It's such a struggle. And I kind of laugh at that now, because obviously you build on that over time. And like, you look back and think, God, like, isn't a mile lovely? And, you know, I was very lucky. Like, I had a sister also. I've got two sisters, but one of them in particular, who was also a lover of fitness. And I'm highly competitive. So I would do anything in my power to beat her, because I wanted to win everything, because I simply thought I could. And then from there, you kind of discover what kind of fitness you like. So I did track for years, 400 meter sprinter, which is a deathly distance, if anyone's ever tried it. And then throughout school, did all of the school teams, because I had to be in all the teams because I wanted to be the best at everything, which is a bit insane, really, when you've been told with a lung disease to be careful. But I kind of just saw it as a, yeah, that's cool, but no, I'm just going to do it my way, and my way works for me. So I did all of that, and then after that, I had a horse and competed him for a while and did all of that. And then after doing that, I kind of discovered that due to a big drop in my lung function, that I had to really focus on what it was that kept me healthy and alive. That was essentially it. So I, from there, decided to embark on the journey of ultra adventures, ultra marathons, mountains, all sorts of things, because one, it fired me up, and it was what, and I am still very passionate about it, and I love seeing what you can do simply when you put yourself in a hole. And also because I think if I can do it and I can show this to the rest of the world, then look what other people could then do off the back of it. It doesn't have to be extreme. It could just be something they want to do, and it might just give them the courage to go and do it. So I've always done fitness and sport and things like that. So I've been lucky where I've been brought up like that. And my mum and dad have kind of had no choice but to let me fly the nest and do my own thing, because I'm that strong-willed that I would do it anyway. And they've just supported me. So with having cystic fibrosis, I kind of just got thrown out like everyone, every other child would have done, into the world and been like, well, you're a kid, go and live. And I was so lucky that they had that outlet, because even to this day, I have so many people messaging me online saying, oh, but I wrap my kid up in the cotton wool. And I'm like, no, like they need to live a normal life as possible around the hospital stuff, because I think that is one of the most important lessons, not only to keep fit and well, but to build a strong immune system and just to be a human being rather than somebody that's felt like they're prodded and poked by needles and things like that all the time.
I love one of your images that I think is, from my personal experience, one of your most inspiring images on your Instagram is your reality versus Instagram. I know that did the rounds on, you know, across fitness people, and it was like, you know, a non-makeup photo or, you know, a not sucked in photo versus like an amazing Instagram media. And yours is like one in a bed, I think doing one of the breathing apparatuses or using one of the breathing apparatuses, and then the Instagram image beside it. I absolutely love that image.
Yeah, that would be the one of me standing on Mont Blanc after completing the summit. Oh, and me versus having a bronchoscopy, which was literally about 5 months later. But it's one of those things, I think, because especially with social media, it's so easy to be sucked in and taken away by the good images. Like I love to try and keep things real. And you know, I'm very lucky. I work hard, and like predominantly my life is hospital free, but it isn't 100%. And I like to show that, because it shows that, yes, I have the hospital visits, but I also go and climb huge fucking mountains.
I love that.
And do things.
What was your first ultra event? Because I'm very curious to know your mindset, and I'm going to kind of delve into that as we go in through this episode. But what was your first ultra event that you signed up for? And kind of talk me through that experience.
Well, to this day, it kind of still makes me laugh a little bit, because I think unless you've done ultra, because I remember Tom Otten actually helped me massively with this, and he was coaching me through the entire time I was out on that course. And all he kept so positive, because he knew that I was running so blind. And I basically got offered this ultra event. It was a race to the stones. It was only 100K. And I thought, oh,
Only 100K for everybody listening, Sophie, just to give context, because it's funny, as much as me and you and Tom and Marcus and other people do the ultra events, not an awful lot of people listening will listen. 100 kilometers is well over a double marathon, just to give everybody a bit of context to the distance.
Well, this is the thing. So when I said this to my dad, he was like, oh God, you haven't really thought about this. I was like, oh, it's only 100K. Like, well, how bad can it be? Like, you know, you start and you finish. That's kind of it, isn't it? You cross the finish line. Anyway, nothing was going to stop me until I kind of didn't play this very well, because I'll be honest, like I didn't really train very hard, because in my head, I was like, oh, well, I can finish everything. I don't ever fail. So why shouldn't I finish this? So my poor best friend got dragged along with me, and she had trained, bless her, which is obviously amazing. And I remember so much when we started this event and we were 5% in, and I was like, oh yeah, that's 5% done already. Like, this is going to be fine. And she just looked at me like, oh God, who have I started this race with? Like, why am I here? And obviously, as you know, with ultras, like you go through peaks and troughs, and you go as high as laughing until you're crying, until you're so low, you don't even know what to say. You can't even speak. You can't even see. Like, so when you go through an ultra, you basically learn about who you are and what you're capable of. And I think that's the beauty of it. You have to go through the tough times and the struggles to actually come out the other side. And you have to be willing to get comfortable with that for a long period of time, because I was so sure that I'd gone crazy.
That's the nature of the beast with ultra. It's funny, I was watching your Instagram stories today, and you were mentioning that when you very similar to why I love ultra endurance events, is you have to physically push yourself to the point that you feel like you're going to mentally break. It's just, it's the nature of the beast when you're running 100 kilometers or less or more, slightly less or slightly more. But as a result, you kind of really find out who you are, because it's like, where does your mind go when you are physically at your the end of your line or you're in your tether? And one of the things I'm curious about, you've built this mindset up, obviously, over years and years of struggle. What was the kind of progression to, because we'll see the finish line of a 100 kilometer ultra marathon, we'll see the Race of the Stones, we'll see all these incredible feats and journeys and different events that you're planning to do and will overcome and accomplish, I have no doubt. But your journey over the last few years to building that mindset that I can do anything and I can put one foot in front of the other and just get it done, was that something that you built gradually, or was there a catalyst moment, like a low point at some stage where you made the decision and a light bulb just flicked in your head in terms of your teenage years or maybe later in life? What was that kind of journey like for you? What built that strength? Was it gradual over time, or was there a catalyst moment?
Well, I think it's a bit of a combination of both, because I've always been that person where I'm like, yeah, I can do this, I can do that, and never had a doubt that I could, because I was very good at telling myself that I had no choice, that I had to do it, like you have to take action. But when I was 19, I had a 50% drop in lung function in about 3 months, and as you know, like, that's really sudden, and nobody could really figure out what was going on, and I ended up for the first time in my entire life in a hospital admission for 2 weeks, wired up to all these machines. And I was like, what is this life? Like, what is going on? Like, and I think that's when I'd actually realized I had cystic fibrosis and the severity of a disease. And actually, like, it could actually kill you if you don't take control. And as much as obviously it does come down to personal genetics and things like that, but I think we all have an element of control, whether you do have a disease or not, and helping it as much as possible. And I sat there and the doctor turned around and said to me, he was like, well, Soph, like, we can't seem to recover this. Like, I'm really sorry, but this is it for you now. This is your new baseline and you're going to have to deal with that. And, you know, CF's going to take you like it does the rest of them. And then I thought, do you know what? You're not right, because you're basically basing something that you have no idea about, i.e. why my health has done this, on a normal statistic of CF. So I'm going to prove you wrong. And so I booked to summit Kilimanjaro the following year in the aim that I would work up to that, because at that time there was only one other female that had summited with CF, and I was like, I'm going to be the second. So that's when I went away and retrained into fitness and worked with a guy called Charlie Pedler at St. Mary's University in London. And we did a load of VO2 max testing and things like that. And I said to him, like, do you think it's possible for me to increase my lung function at all? And he was like, well, let's give it a go. You come and do this VO2 max test and come back in 8 weeks and we'll see. And I did that and I trained really hard and did a few different things, documented the whole thing, came back, and both results had gone up by 20%. So I was like, okay, well, what happens if I do that again? So I went away, went back, and my lung function, before I knew it, was back at 100%. So I went straight back into the hospital, slammed the results down on this doctor's table, and I said, don't you dare turn around and say this to me again, or anyone else for that matter. There's always a way. And he then refused to see me for about 2 years because he didn't want to face me, because he knew I was right. Until eventually he went down on one knee, shook my hand and said, apologize, I'm sorry, now what can I learn from you? So, you know, that's a stubborn will that I was wanted to basically take on the challenge. And luckily I love a challenge, but do it in a way that I knew that was safe. Because obviously with a lung disease, you have to do it with the way that you know within your own capability. But at the same time, I wasn't going to be told at the age of 19 that I was going to die. Because I've been told my entire life that I was dying, and yet I'd made it this far. So why can't I make it another 20 years?
I love how you're literally using, I don't want to say negativity, but the words that are coming from, say, the medical profession or people that are telling you, look, you're going to die. Like, it's one of the things that I gravitate towards so much towards your content, and similar to my friend Ben Mudge, and I know this as someone that's, you know, had, you know, a cousin pass away from it, I've seen it firsthand, and to see you kind of come back against it is so inspiring, regardless of whether you have CF or not. I think that attitude towards life, on taking the fuel that people are telling you you can't do something, or here's this statistic, it's like, well, here, I'm going to go against that. What, when you set a goal for yourself, like, say, Kilimanjaro, or like the Race to the Stones 100 kilometer ultra, do you have like a goal setting procedure on how you work backwards? Do you kind of just, because you said that you kind of rolled in and rocked up to the 100 kilometer, what's your kind of procedure for when you set these massive goals for yourself, considering your starting position, you know, in hospital at 19, 50% lung capacity, you know, it's starting to, from the outside, look like it's going downhill. What's your kind of procedure when you set a goal and then working backwards from it? What does that look like?
Well, so it depends on the goal. So like for Kilimanjaro, for example, I decided that there was no way I was ever going to be leaving Africa until I'd reached that summit, because I had one doctor sign it off because she was a mountaineer and she just said, I trust you. And so what I did is I saw the goal in sight and then broke it down backwards. So I was like, well, where am I now? Like, how far can I walk uphill without stopping? Like, how many hours is that? How, like, what distance is that? And then, because obviously when you do these races that like, you do get like a breakdown of what each day may entail. And so then I started doing that training with a backpack on, and, you know, I did a lot of short, sharp cardio based fitness, and because that's what I knew that I was really good at, and I knew that mentally I could build on that to increase that into longer distances. So for me, like, I did that, and then I actually went out to the Astley Chamber in London and did a bit of training there as well on treadmills and incline stuff, and did lots of stuff like that, because obviously I'd never been into altitude before, and I was like, the only thing that will ever stop me is the fact that my body can't deal with altitude. And so for Kilimanjaro, I worked backwards that way, and then basically thought, if I can walk for 6 or 7 hours a day with a 15 kilo backpack on, then I can definitely do it. That there is no reason why not, because so long as you're fueling yourself right on the actual race or the actual mountain, and you're drinking enough and you're sleeping and things like that, like, there is no reason other than your mind giving in that you shouldn't make it, because you're never going to be too tired to do it unless you physically can't actually put one foot in front of the other. And that's kind of the way the ultra went. And obviously I was silly and didn't really prepare for it in as much, but it kind of showed me what I was able to do without really trying, which is insane, really. Because I, funnily enough, I've never actually done a marathon. I've done an ultra marathon, I've done a half marathon, but I haven't just, actually done a marathon.
Just skip the middle one completely.
Well, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it in a cool place. So I've got to put that on hold until I find where I want to go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I want to kind of pause on this for a second. It's just because you said some interesting things there. I've spoken on the podcast in the past about doing pre-mortems on things. Like, what could, literally in your case, what could potentially kill me? The altitude, you know, it's weighing up. Well, what are the things that could potentially stop me summiting Kilimanjaro, and then working backwards to prepare your body for that? And I'm curious, because you mentioned there the only thing that would stop you is your mindset. And I'm curious, what is your kind of self-talk or inner dialogue like when, because we all get to that point, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but I know myself, when I was running through the Sahara, running through the Arctic, doing all these other different events that I've done, that your self-talk and your inner dialogue with yourself is always very interesting on where it goes. What does yours look like in terms of, do you repeat mantras for yourself? Do you just stay focused in the moment? Do you use the fuel that you've been told? What does it normally look like for you when you said that your mindset is the thing that could let you down? What do you use to combat that or strengthen it so that you can actually hit your end goal?
Do you know what? It's the most simplest thing. And it goes a bit like this. Pain goes away. Do not give into it unless you're going to die. Because as soon as you stop, and if you don't finish that race, that will be with you for the rest of your life. So you just have to keep putting one step in front of the other.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's, I think, that philosophy. And you mentioned either today or yesterday on running 400 meters, I think it was in one of your workouts, and you told somebody, you were like, look, you're not going to die after sprinting or running 400 meters. Yeah. It's like, it'll be sore, you'll be in pain, but you're not going to die.
Actually really funny, because I'd done 45 minutes of non-stop pad work on boxing, and then my coach was like, right, we're just going to do a quick 15-minute conditioning circuit. You're going to be doing 10 roll bucks, 10 burpees, 10 floor chest burpees, 10 squat jumps, and then I'm going to chase you for 400 meters. And he was like, if I beat you, that round doesn't count. So you have to do it again. And I was like, being chased is terrifying. But okay, like, it's fine. He was like, I'll give you a head start. I was like, no, you're not. I don't want a head start. Because that's kind of in my head. I'm like, I'm cheating. I said, you're faster than me. I'll give you that. But you're not as fit. So that evens out eventually. So basically, he ran one way around. I ran the other. And I obviously beat him three times over. And I was like, well, you better up your game then. Because, you know, your client's being fitter than the coach. As a joke, obviously. But in my head, I was like, because I know where I'd point the pass, I pass him around this circuit. I was like, I know I can beat him. I'm absolutely shattered, but it's literally like 20 seconds of my life. If I slow down now, like, I'm going to think about that for the rest of the day. So it's a lot of self-talk, just being like, just dig a bit deeper. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? The pain's not going to be any worse. So you may as well do it.
Yeah, you may as well commit and go all in. Like, That's the thing with training. It's like, the pain at 90% isn't that much worse than at 100%. Like, when you're sprinting at 90, like, you're like, you may as well go flat out because you're going to hurt either way.
Yeah, if it's the same time, then you might as well just do it and just suck it up and just get on with it. Because at the same time, like, there is no better feeling than pushing yourself that extra 10% and being like, wow, that actually felt amazing. I'm dying, but that felt amazing. And then you realize that you probably could have then pushed a bit more.
Yeah, the endorphin release off pushing your body to the physical limit, like, that's amazing. I love the being chased too. It's so primal. Like, yeah. I'm going to chase after you. Tell me, Sophie, what's your training look like currently?
So I box twice a week and spar once a week, but that is only come about because I got thrown into a white collar boxing match earlier at the end of last year. And I just loved the training because it's so hard and it's so difficult and it's so technical and you have to get it right. So basically that's carried on since doing the fight. And then from there, I would do a couple of speed sessions a week, either running up and down stairs, weighted vests, or more conditioning based with like prowlers and, you know, sharp movements and things like that. But I'll also make sure I get some weight sessions in as well because I want to keep strong. Like, I'm basically aiming to kind of trying to be a superhero. Like, I want to be fast, but I want to be strong and I want to run far. So it's kind of like getting those in, but I only train about five times a week anyway, because I try and use the other days for lots of active recovery, lots of mobility and flexibility training. Because I think if you can nail that, then you can nail your training even better. And it's so important to allow your body to rest and recover, especially if you are wanting to push yourself and train hard with all of your sessions.
Yeah, and for anyone that's unfamiliar with how Sophie looks, you're not built like an ultra endurance athlete. Like, you're jacked, like, you know, like full on six pack, eight pack muscle. Like, you look like an athlete. Like, you look like you could handpick any sport that is like sprint based. I'm like, yeah, that person does that. Like, if you were just randomly looking at your photo, and it's a testament to the way that you train. And I love that you document so much of that on your social media. What about your nutrition then? What's your diet look like?
So obviously having cystic fibrosis means that my digestion is really rubbish. So I have to take tablets before I eat, because otherwise my food basically doesn't get digested, which is a bit rubbish. So I focus on a high fat, high protein diet mainly, because that's what works for me. Obviously you have to have the carbs in there because you're never going to have the energy. So I have three core meals a day, which include most of those, but my carbs will basically be whenever I'm going to be working out. But around that, I do make sure I snack a couple of times a day, because I'm always on the go and I'm very aware that if I don't, I either have a massive energy dip or I will lose weight. And obviously with CF is another thing. If you lose too much weight, it can really impact your lung capacity. And so with that, I have to try and stick at 60 kilos no matter what I'm doing. So depending on how much I'm training will depend really daily on what volume I'm eating. But I do try and hit 3,000 calories a day.
What kind of foods do you use?
So lots of, so I'm meat-based, so lots of chicken and fish, lots of rice, sweet potato, lots of green leafy veggies, because for me, I find that really aids my chest, which is amazing. For breakfast, I'll either, depending on what time I'm getting up, which is usually 5, I will grab a shake or some porridge or something like that. And then about mid-morning, I'll have some eggs and salmon. And then after that, depending if I've just trained or whatever, will probably be something like chicken rice with some veg or something like that. And then in the afternoon, which is kind of like my afternoon pick-me-up, but afternoon secret enjoyment is Greek yogurt peanut butter with broken up dark chocolate. It's like my indulgence for the
which
day.
Which dark chocolate?
Dark chocolate. So it's 85%.
Oh, that sounds nice. That sounds like
it's literally like, I have it after training. It's like, yes, this is so good. Or if you are feeling adventurous, you can freeze it and eat it as ice cream. That's also pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a dinner very similar to lunch, depending on what's going on. But if I am still hungry, I will, like last night, for example, after my being chased, I was still hungry. So I had a bowl of oats before bed because for me, like, it's really important that I don't go to bed hungry because otherwise I don't sleep.
What's your sleep like generally, if assuming that you've eaten and you're not going to bed hungry? What are you like as a sleeper?
Really well, actually. I'll get 8 hours of sleep a night near enough. Like, I've got a little sleep routine that I go through. And actually, since listening to you, I'm considering getting some blue light blocking glasses as well. But I think sleep for me is a massive part of it, because when you have to, or you want to get up at five every day to get on and do your thing, it's so important that you actually rest and sleep, because I'm not a believer of like lack of sleep will help you. Like, lack of sleep will just eventually catch up with you. And especially if you are wanting to go all in your business and your job and your friends and everything like that and your fitness, it's so important that you try and get the 8 hours. And generally, I will get that, because I think it's really important. And because I'm obviously battling CF at the same time, and which I think Ben probably would have said before, sleep is one of the biggest things that you need to be rested.
Yeah, I always think of like foundation pillars for fitness, nutrition, training and sleep. And anytime anyone ever asks, I always have nutrition as like the main one, but then sleep is next. And then training is normally third, because if you're not sleeping, you're not physically or mentally recovering, and it's going to have a negative impact on the following day. You get up at 5 a.m. and you mentioned there about grabbing a shake. Do you have any morning routine, or do you get up and you just go as soon as you wake up? What do the kind of the first 60 to 90 minutes of your day look like?
So I'll get up and I actually write down my gratitudes while my brain is waking up. So it takes about 5 minutes. I just write down a few things that either happened and I'm like, wow, this has happened. Or even the simplest things, like I'm grateful for something my mum's done for me, or grateful for that client because she texted me and said she had a great session, or grateful for the fact that, you know, I've woken up and I feel great, my lungs feel great, and I'm looking forward to the day ahead. Because I think if you can do that, you kind of find yourself, one, being more productive in the day, because I think you're much more aware of who you are and what you're doing and the things that you're working towards. But also, I think you then do become a happier person and more content and more able to deal with different situations. Because instead of a lot of people that I know that have the attitude of why me, like this isn't fair, I'm like, do you know what? I've been given this hand and I'm very lucky because it's made my life. So I'm going to be so grateful for every single day that I'm here, because we only actually die once. Like, you live every day, but so for some reason people say it the other way around. And I always find that really confusing, because I'm like, you have every single day to find out, like, have a new opportunity. Yet for some reason you let the days run away. Like, I'm not saying, like, obviously, you know, every single day should be a great day, because every single day there's different things that come up. But generally, you know, if you can get up and count your gratitude, you'll find that you'll have a much nicer life. So normally, once I've done that, I jump in and have a cold shower. I've been doing the cold shower thing for a while now, which is actually changed my life quite a lot in a really random way. So I do that to try and like wake me up and kind of get me ready for the day. And then
just to pause on that for a second, because I saw in January you started the Wim Hof challenge, the cold shower, and it's obviously stuck. How long do you do in the cold shower? This is an amazing way to start a day, by the way, for anyone listening. I've done something similar. What does your kind of cold shower look like? Do you jump in and out? Do you stay in for a certain period of time? Do you just get a short burst and then come out? What does that look like?
Well, I started off with a challenge, and it was basically you built up over 4 weeks, 15 seconds circuit. So I did that because I was like, oh, I'll follow NDC. And now, depending on how I feel, it depends on what I do. So sometimes I jump in the shower and do a bit of hot, cold therapy. So like 20 seconds cold, 10 seconds hot kind of thing for a few rounds. Sometimes I jump in just for like a minute, cold shower, get it on your face, just wake up. And like, it gives you so much energy. Like, people think I'm mad when I say this, but I'm like, go and try it and don't tell me that you don't feel energized after. Like, obviously it's going to be cold for a while, but once you get used to it, like, it actually just instantly wakes me up and I'm like, I'm ready for this day. And it's weird how something like that I never really thought about before has impacted my life so much. And it's something that I probably will always do now, because one, it's so good for you anyway. There's so many health benefits, but also just a mindset thing. Like, I feel like I'm up, it's woken me up, I'm ready, like my body's ready. And so I can just take on this day, whatever it's thrown at me.
Yeah, it's an amazing way to kickstart your day. I just finished the book by Scott Kearney, What Doesn't Kill Us. It's a New York Times bestseller and it's featured around Wim Hof. It's one of the original kind of books that put him on the map, just because of the mass distribution from, you know, a well-known journalist. And the cold therapy, the endorphin release you get from cold therapy is unbelievable. Cold shower or ice baths or whatever it is. Like, for anyone that's dealing with, you know, self-imposed anxiety or kind of like anything where you can't switch your mind off, that's an amazing way to start your day or to end your day, to switch your brain off. I absolutely love it. What do you do then after? Just before I had kind of cut you off to bring it back on what your routine was for the morning, what do you do after the cold shower then?
I'll go and eat. So depending on how much time I've got left, it'll either be porridge or a shake. And then I will make a coffee to go with me as I leave the house. So it's quite a simple routine, really. But it's something that really actually just sets me up for the day.
You mentioned a quote there, or your own quote. I'm going to quote you on this, is that you die once, but you live every day, not the other way around. I'm 100% putting that in the episode show notes somewhere. I absolutely love that. We spoke about this very briefly just before we went on air, and I said, hold it. I said, we'll talk about this on air, because I'd normally ask people what they do for their downtime. And I'm sure you have methods and things that you enjoy, but you spoke about that you're happier when you're doing things and you're constantly going. Talk to me a little bit about that.
So I'm the kind of person, like, I thrive off of doing things, whether it be for something to do with my downtime, whether it be my career, fitness. And for me, like, fitness and mental health come in hand, and I always feel better and I'm more positive, although I'm very positive anyway, if I've even just moved. I'm not talking going to smash myself in the gym. I'm just talking even if I'd just been for a walk. And I think people associate sitting down with happiness. Does that make sense?
Or confusing comfort and happiness. Yeah.
And actually, for me, like, yes, of course, I enjoy sitting down every so often because that's normal. But actually, I'm far happier and I feel so good by the end of the day, even if I've done just one or two things within that day that make me feel good and it make me busy. And like, I stick to quite a strict schedule to do with my work based life and things like that. But the busier I am, the happier I am and the more productive I am in my life. So it doesn't mean to say I don't have quieter days, but I certainly probably wouldn't ever have a day where I sat down for the entire day, because I know that I would feel really groggy and slow and I'd feel a bit off in my mind, and I don't want to feel like that. So even if it's just going out for a walk with a friend and a coffee or something like that, I would much rather keep moving and do something and actually make the most out of the days, especially if I do have a day off. Because for me, that's what makes me happy. And I think a lot of people, as you say, confuse happiness and comfort. And actually, it doesn't always work that way, because you do find there's a lot of mental health associated problems that come with people that don't do a lot, that have too much time to think because they're not actually going out there and taking action and just doing things they actually enjoy for some reason. So as much as I'm not 100 miles an hour every day, I do try and fill my days because that's what I enjoy doing. And most people think I'm absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's the beauty of like living your own path and doing your own thing and not being too worried about the opinions of others, means that you can basically run life the way that makes you the most happy. And I think that I just want to touch on that before we move on, that confusing comfort and happiness is something I've done in the past 100%, where I confused nice things, having nice, having other people look at you and think, oh wow, look how well they're doing, and sitting in a nice warm house and you think that's happiness. And ironically, the happiest I've probably ever been outside of, you know, life events like my daughter being born, etc., is when I'm at the most uncomfortable, you know, running through the Sahara, running through the Arctic, because you're physically challenging yourself and you know you're making yourself mentally strong. And I think that just understanding and not confusing the two is a very, very important way of thinking for anybody that is a bit misunderstood on it, as someone that kind of lived the other side and had to come out the other kind of way or come out the other angle from it. With mental health, you mentioned mental health there a couple of times. Is that something that you had struggled with? And the reason I ask that is because of the gratitude journal in the morning and the way that that can kind of rewire your mind to focus on the positive things. And I'm a big believer in that. I do the exact same thing. But it was the reason I did it was because of my past issues with mental health. Is that something that you had a problem with, or is it something that you just do because it's something that serves you daily?
Do you know what I think? Do you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say there was an element of mental health, because I think everyone goes through times where they struggle. And there was a time where I was a bit like, but why have I been given this disease? So I didn't ask for this. And that's when I realized that you can use things to your power. And I basically really enjoy counting my gratitudes, because I think it is one of the most important things you can do, because I think we spend so much of our lives being like, okay, what's next? What's next? Like, for example, last year I summited Mont Blanc, which was one of the most crazy experiences of my life. And as you say, like, that's where happiness and comfort come in, because it was hard, but it was so amazing. But like, it was also like one of those times where I was like, you know, I'm grateful for this experience. And without having the mental health problems that came with being told I was going to die really young, I probably wouldn't have been here today doing this mountain. And I think, you know, it's just important to actually realize whether you are having mental struggles or not, because I think a lot of people try and shy away from it. And in fact, if you just face it head on and deal with it and try and move forward with it, then, you know, you actually find that you build a life that you may have not even ever expected to build, or do things you may have never expected you have the capability to do, simply because you've taken life by the horns and been like, you know what? Yes, I'm struggling, but that's also okay. But what am I going to do about it? And I just think it's just really one of those things where if you can have that attitude, you can have people help you show you that way. Because I think a lot of stuff with mental health, you have to deal with it yourself. Like, you have to be ready to deal with it. You have to be wanting to take it forward and find a way through it, because somebody can tell you until you go blue in the face of what you need to do, but you actually have to take your own action. And I think for me, that's why I started doing it, because I was like, I don't want to be, I'm sick of having certain barriers up. I want to get over them. So this is how I'm going to deal with it.
What does that process look like in terms of when I think of dealing with mental health or dealing with any kind of mental or emotional struggle? When I hear gratitude journal, I think of like tools in the toolkit. What are kind of some of the other tools that you have for people listening? Because there's people listening that, you know, have self-imposed anxiety, have environmental anxiety or depression because something's not right in their life right now. What are the, kind of the other tools that you have? Do you go internal and handle it yourself, or do you have an inner circle of people that you communicate it with, or do you go to books and podcasts and try and search for the answer? What's your kind of process or other tools that you use when a mental struggle like that comes up?
So I have two main ones. One of them is I will go and speak to my best friends about the struggle, because 9 times out of 10 I find that I know that I'm being a bit ridiculous about it. So basically, to confirm my initial thoughts, I will go and speak to my friends that then turn around and say, yeah, you're being a bit silly, you're over exaggerating, things are going to be fine, like, seriously, like, it's going to be fine, don't worry about it. And the other one is I take myself back to a time where I feel would match that struggle or match that feeling and think, well, I've got through it once, I can do this again. In actual fact, I'm a stronger person than I was. So basically, this is why I do 3 things a day that try and help combat that regardless. So obviously one of them is a gratitude journal. One of them is to basically do something to build mental toughness. So something that I find really hard or something that I don't want to do, And then something that I know is going to make me feel good or bring me happiness within my day.
What are examples of both of those? What would be like, you know, a recent example of the mental toughness and a recent example of the happiness?
So happiness, say, for example, on Sunday, I was lucky enough to celebrate one of my best friend's engagements. So I got to the opportunity to go around there and have some champagne with her. And that obviously seeing her so happy brought me a lot of joy. And, you know, it was something I actually knew about for months. So finally I could talk about it. And so that was one thing for that day. And something that I would find hard, either fueled by fitness or something that I don't want to do, like 10 laps of hill sprints, for example, because they're hard in a certain time, or doing my daily medication regime, which is quite extensive.
Yeah, I love that philosophy. Every podcast that I do, I'm so fortunate that I get to speak with people like you. I always take something myself personally and like selfishly. And I think that thought process of do something every day that challenges you is something that I do, but do something every day that just makes you happy, that makes you... Because there's a difference between being grateful and being happy, because being grateful is nearly just a mindset and the way that you're framing a situation and what you're focusing on. And being happy is, you know, making a list of the things that make you happy and make sure that you're doing one of those things every single day. And you spoke about your best friend there as well. And I just want to pull that out for everybody listening. And I speak about this regularly on the podcast, particularly the random episodes with Paul Dermody, who is one of my inner circle of people. And having somebody that you can work as a sounding board off, because sometimes you get up in your own head and like, if some of the mental chatter, and I'm sure you're the same, Sophie, where you're like, your head is going crazy with an idea and then you say it out loud to your best friend or your inner circle and you're like, oh, actually, it's actually not that big of a deal or it's actually not that big of a problem. And I think it's really, really important. And the anchoring of past success to deal with the future struggle. I think that's really, really important to do as well. In terms of future challenges that you set for yourself, what's next on your kind of radar?
Are we talking physical challenges?
It's up to you. We can go whatever direction. I know what your physical challenge is, so I'm curious. You can tell everybody, or we can go whatever direction you like.
So this year so far, because I say so far, because you just never know what's going to pop up next. So I've got an 80-mile paddleboarding challenge to do from the Bahamas to Florida in one go, which will be insane.
Can you explain what paddleboarding is for people? Just because until I was in Los Angeles recently, I'd heard of paddleboarding and I actually never knew what it was. Just for anyone that's listening that is the same as me and is like, oh, I've heard of that, but I actually don't know what paddleboarding is.
Of course. You basically stand on a board with a paddle and you basically, depending on what direction you want to go, have the paddle on one side of the board and you basically move along in a direction. It is actually quite difficult because you've got to have a lot of coordination and balance on the water, depending on how rough the sea is as well. So I think you only actually travel at like maybe 5 miles an hour. I don't think it's very fast, depending on how fit you are, I guess.
Yeah, you kind of undersold that because I paddleboarded when I went to visit Tom in Dubai, and it's hard. I fell off like 4 times. So to go whatever, what distance did you say you're covering on it? It's 80, isn't it?
I was only 80 miles.
That's only 80 miles. Talk us through. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but just to kind of talk on what paddleboarding was for anyone unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, to be fair, like, it is a great sport. Like, it's something that actually anyone can do so long as you're wanting to kind of learn. Because obviously you can do it from your knees. You don't have to stand up. But it's an 80-mile paddleboard from the Bahamas to Florida. And I spoke to the guys about it. And they're like, oh, well, don't worry. You can get off the board at any time. And I was like, hang on a minute. No, if I'm doing this, my feet are going to be firmly on this board for 80 miles. You're just going to have to throw me the snacks. And I'll set up a picnic on my board. Like, I'm all in. Like, it's all or nothing. So alongside that and the sharks that we're going to see, it's going to be a bit of an incredible experience, I think, because it's something that I never expected to do. So I've been really lucky to be offered that. And then about 8 weeks after that, I'm actually riding the length of Britain on a bike. So 1,000 miles from Land's End to John O'Groats. So that'll be over 9 days.
That's nuts. Yeah, it's the 980-mile challenge over 9 days, like just under 1,000 miles. When is that? That's September, isn't it?
Yeah, so that would be from the 7th of September, which it's going to be really fun and it's going to be hilarious because up until recently, I have never sat on a road bike. So always do the things you think you can't do and prove you can.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
It's a philosophy on that one.
Yeah, I literally couldn't agree more. Like one of the, it's funny because we were chatting last week or the week before about, you were talking about, you know, a couple of things that you're thinking of doing next year, 2020. And I got that same exact vibe from you. It's like, just throw yourself into the deep end and kind of figure it out. Like, I always think of the analogy, you know, like, you know, bite off more than you can chew and then just learn to chew faster. Like, and yeah. I think that philosophy is it can be, sometimes gets you into trouble in terms of, it's got me into probably a lot of trouble at times, but it's, when you come out the other side, it's always like super confidence building and you feel so much better for it. I'm going to take a slightly different direction now with just some other questions. So feel free to expand on them or answer them however you see fit. When I say the word successful, what personality trait or characteristic comes to mind and why?
To me, successful is happiness and challenging yourself to do the things that you don't think you can do, or pushing yourself so much that you have to, as we've said before, like mentally break to get through the other side. And I realize that most people now think I'm going to think I'm absolutely crazy, but that to me is success. Like, it's not down to money. It's not down to anything like that. It's not down to how many houses you've got. It's down to that, those things exactly.
The next one, you can take this in whatever direction you want, just because having been through the life and lived the life that you've lived over the last 27 years or so, you've obviously had a lot of failures, either from your health standpoint, from the fitness standpoint, physical area of life, just because of constantly challenging yourself. But do you have a favorite failure, in the sense that a failure that at the time you were gutted that this is what happened, but it actually set you up for later success?
Do you know what I do? And it was about just over a year ago this happened, and it was an unforeseen incident that occurred, which basically meant that at the time my business crashed and there was nothing I could do about it. It wasn't even my fault. It was something that happened. And then about 2 weeks after that, I was involved in a really serious car accident. And to me at that time, like, my whole life had crashed down into one. And I literally was like, what is going on? Like, not only has this happened to my business, I've literally nearly died in a car accident. I don't know what to do with it. And then obviously over time, when things kind of are processed and you get through it, you're like, do you know what? Those two things were a massive wake up call and enabled me to actually meet the people that I need to be working with and the people that actually believe in me and that will push me in the right direction. And the car accident especially made me actually want to live even harder, which most people didn't think that was even a possibility. But, you know, I always see that you never really fail because you always learn. And if you can learn to enjoy anything in your life that you are failing at or things that happen, then you're only ever going to be successful. So you've just got to move forward in life. I think, yeah, life happens, things go wrong, there are big failures in life, but they do happen for a reason, and you will be then redirected down a path that actually is maybe more suited, or also a path that you never ever expected to be led down, which is the amazing thing. Because obviously in the time of turmoil, you're like, wow, like, what do I do with this? But I can guarantee you, whatever has happened even to you in your life and things you've found out, you'll look back and think, well, thank God that happened.
It's so funny how often you hear a version of that from people who are going after the things that they want, where they either frame failure as a positive thing, that the seed of every failure is kind of the tree of future success. But a philosophy, I can't remember, was it my mother or my grandmother that used to always tell me, I remember when we were kids, me and my sister, it was the philosophy that, you know, sometimes the universe has to give you, you know, can't give you what you want so that it can give you what you need. And that philosophy can be very, very supportive when going through troubled times. And there's people listening now that it might not be a car crash. It might be, you know, being let go from their job, a failed exam, you know, a bad relationship. There's struggles, but those failures are feedback for future success, and you need to be able to see it that way. Next one. What purchase of £100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 12 or 18 months?
I've been thinking about this all week.
What's
I'm
that?
Listening to you. I've been thinking about this all week because I know you, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. It's a really hard question because there are so many different things that I have purchased for under £100 that are useful.
You can go a little bit over. If there's something that you feel very passionate about that you're like, nah, that was £150 or £200, you can share that too. If it's something that you're like, I don't know how I couldn't live without this right now.
Okay. But actually, my purchase is really simple and it cost about not even probably £9. A resistance band that I can take anywhere I go. Not only obviously it helps your training, but it helps you with mobility and stretching. But it's actually one of those things that has aided my training so much because it's enabled me to travel and train, which is a big thing that I know people struggle with. So I've been able to go away. Like last week, I was in Switzerland, for example, took it with me, did a bit of training with it in my room or in the gym or whatever. And it's just been really helpful for all kinds of things. So that.
Yeah, it's really, really handy. I used to travel everywhere with the TRX, which is slightly over £100. I can't remember how much my TRX cost until someone broke it. I lent it to someone in the gym and they broke it after like, whatever, 30, 40 seconds. I was like, how did you, but you haven't had it 2 minutes. I was like, how did you break it?
But it
happens. Next one. If you were given, this one's a little bit of a left curve because I've only used this once or twice in the podcast and I know you're an avid listener, so I'm like, well, I have to throw you a couple of curveballs. If you were given the chance to live one day in the life of somebody else, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's really difficult. Do you know what? You probably would have heard this maybe before if you've asked it before, but it would be some form of athlete. So like, somebody like maybe Marcus Smith, because I think his mindset and stuff, or Tom Otten, is like out of this world. And some of the things that he says and or goes through or pushes himself through. So like for me, it'll be an athlete, but doing a race. So like you could physically feel and, you know, actually hear what their head's telling them and how they overcome things, because I think it would be such a powerful lesson. Because I think everyone assumes that athletes especially don't have these doubts and things and don't have like the devil on their shoulder talking over them being like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. But actually they do. And it's how they deal with that and how they push forward and how they find the extra 10% to finish that race or to find a new PB or something like that.
I love that answer. That's not what I expected. And to even put it into the frame of why and the position that you would insert yourself in terms of, you know, struggling midway through a race. I absolutely love that. I'm totally stealing that if I ever get asked that question.
Sure.
Sophie, I'm curious, because of your knowledge on mindset and fitness and everything that you put out in general, just, you know, to the cystic fibrosis community, to the fitness world in general, what's your favorite way to learn? Do you read a lot? Is it through podcasts? Is it through YouTube videos? What's your kind of favorite way of consuming information?
Well, I like to try and do things as efficiently as possible. So whenever I'm driving, I will have a podcast on and I will probably listen to maybe two a day. So I drive to and from work twice a day. So like, I will make sure that it will be something either that I'm really interested in, or depending on what's coming up in my life. Say, for example, I've got a race coming, I'd probably go back to, say, Tom Otten's podcast on your podcast, for example. Or if it's something I'm really interested in or I want to learn more about, like I've done a lot of podcasts recently about sleep and like different ways of eating and things like that, because I think for me, like I pick up so much more when I'm being spoken to. And if you can kind of lose yourself in a podcast, especially with this bike event I've got coming up, the ultra event, I will sit and listen to a podcast for an hour while I'm on a bike. Because I think if I can kind of not kill two birds with one stone, but I think it kind of also pushes you, especially if you're listening to somebody that's amazing and they've done all this thing and you're on this bike and thinking, oh, I'm a bit tired. And in reality, you're not, because you can keep going. So for me, I'll sit and I'll download a load of podcasts on a Sunday and then get through them within the week. And usually then what I'll do is I'll ping them out to all my friends that are interested in it so that they then can have the benefit as well.
Yeah, I love that. Like, that is a really good hack for anyone that is either has to do cardio to, you know, for change their body composition, or is training for an ultra endurance event, either running or cycling, is download and save the podcast. I do the exact same thing, and I'll literally save them. You know, I'll download them on a Sunday or early on a Monday, and I'll keep them and hold them for my longer runs or my longer cycles. I think that's a great tip. The last one, if you got a chance and you're having gone down your rabbit hole several times on Instagram, and I mean that in the most genuine sense, that because I get lost. Like, I love connecting with people like you who are so motivating and live exactly what they preach. And that's one of the reasons that I connect so much with Marcus Smith, who we've spoken about, Tom Otten, who we've spoken about, who are both good friends of mine. And one of the reasons that I connect so much with your message is for the same reason. It's like, here's what I'm telling you to do, here's how I'm living my life, and here's how I'm applying it, and here's how you can do it as well and make it applicable for you. So my last question is, if you got a chance to post one message, quote or thought, or even a philosophy of yours on social media that would reach everybody in the world, or everybody in the Western world, I guess the figurative billboard message to the world, what would that message be, or what would you say to, if you had the opportunity to pass on a message or a thought or a philosophy or a quote to everybody in the Western world?
It would be to basically have the courage to live fearlessly on your terms, to seek the adventure that you're looking to seek within your own journey, and to live a life without regret. Because I think for me, my biggest fear is regretting. And if you can do those things and actually just take action and do it and just go for it, I think you not only would be living a fulfilling life, but then you have the opportunity to fulfill the lives of others.
Just to pull out on that, because you mentioned regret, and I'm always curious when that comes up, because I have my kind of tool and tactic that I use. I use the 97-year-old rule. The decision I'm about to make right now, what would I regret on my 97-year-old deathbed? You know, if I want to quit a race, if I want to make any decision, what would I regret more? What is, do you have an equivalent, or what's your kind of thought process when handling or making decisions where you think you may regret it down the line?
I either refer it back to, am I making an excuse for this because I'm being lazy or that I don't want it enough? But also, I want to get to the age of 97 and look back and think, wow, I have so many stories to tell, rather than I really regret not actually just putting the effort in to do it and to get out there and live. Because I think there's a lot of my friends especially are so fearful of living. Not because of anything untoward, but because they're so fearful of actually seeing what happens next, which I think is a really bizarre mindset to have. And I live in fear of not living. So, you know, I think normally if a regret's ever come in, it's because I've known that I've held myself back in any capacity, whether it be not pushing myself hard enough on a race or not pushing myself hard enough to reach a goal. And that really does stay with me for a long time. And so it's something that I really, whenever I'm about to make a decision on something, I kind of do a similar thing and just think, is this something that's going to affect me for a long time or not? And can I do more? Because I always think if you can do your best in everything, then you're never going to look back and wish you could have done more.
I love it. It's your message, your philosophy, your mindset, Sophie. I'm so grateful that you put that out for the world to see. Can you tell everybody that's listening? I've had an absolute ball with this and I loved it so much. I'm going to be listening back to it next week. Tell everybody that's listening a little bit more about where's the best place to find you, what social media platforms you use the most, and where they can connect with you.
I use Instagram the most, but all of the socials will be my name, Sophie Grace Holmes. It's as simple as that. So yeah, I'm always replying to everyone. I always make sure that I reply to every single DM. So if anyone does want to drop me a line, like, I will get back to you and enjoy speaking to you and your journey and what you're trying to achieve and things. It's something that I do get a lot of joy out of, because I think when you help people and they come back and think, oh, look, I've done this, I've achieved this 5K, or I've done this race, or I booked this event, like, there's nothing better than thinking, wow, I was actually part of that. So yeah, Sophie Grace Holmes, and I look forward to speaking to any of your listeners.
It's so funny. I heard a quote that just, you reminded me of it there, was somebody asked, I can't remember who it was. I think it may have been Gary Vee or somebody in the motivational space. And they asked, how do you motivate a motivator? They're like, tell them you're motivating them. Like, I was like, that. It just reminded me, because I'm like, I'm the exact same. When people are like, you, because this is a, one of the ways we connected. You're like, loved, you know, the podcast with Marcus, with, you know, the Arctic, the with Tom. So motivating, and that motivates the shit out of me. Like, and for everybody listening, do the exact same thing with Sophie. If you're following her content and she's motivated you like she's motivating me, be sure to hit her up, let her know, because that's how you motivate a motivator.
Well, it's true though, isn't it? And then because we're like the way we are, we're like, oh, what can we perform and do next? Like, what's our potential? And then you go off and book something else and you're like, oh no, that was all your fault, but it was going to be amazing anyway.
I love it. Sophie, I will link everything in the show notes for everybody listening. If you go to briankeenfitness.com, I will have all her handles and everything linked on those show notes. Sophie, thank you so much again. This was freaking awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been amazing. It's been so much fun.
Oh, I'm so fired up after that. Like, I love that line, you die once, but you live every day. It's not the other way around. Like, I'm going to brain tattoo that. I absolutely love this episode. I'm so fired up after listening to it. Seeing people like Sophie put out her message and literally practicing what she preaches is so inspiring. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you did and you're listening to this point, thank you for listening all the way through. Be sure to tag me and Sophie on your Instagram stories. I'll link all the information about this episode in the show notes, and let me know what you thought. If you were as lit up and as fired up as I am after this, be sure to let me know. Thank you all for listening. Catch you all next week for another episode.